That's great. Let's talk a little bit about, the anatomy of one of these documents. What does it look like? So, for example, what does an Office 2007 Word document look like? How is it constructed? It's a simple question. You guys know better than anyone else.
Go? In Rochambeau?
Cool.
Go for it, man.
Calvin.
Sorry.
No problem. So, at its base, it's a zip. It's a zip file.
You're going over there.
Right?
Yeah.
And the zip file contains a set of what we call parts.
Uh-huh.
So the zip file, zip equals a package in this case. And really, what a package is a zip with a logical set of relationships and parts within it.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be a file in zip is a part for us. So we have a relationship that points to our main document part. And in Word, this is the document.xml.
And these names, of course, are just arbitrary. We could call that whatever we want.
Yeah, we could.
Since this is a geeky presentation, it could be foo.
It could be.
Right on.
And then off of the documentation, you might have something like comments. Well, there you go. You wanted it to sound like we were just talking. There you are.
Yeah.
Nice touch.
So you could have comments. You could have images that are in that file.
Yep.
You could have there's the styles, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And all of those are just parts. And what you would do in the past, mm-hmm. before we had this new API, if you wanted to, say, go in and just check out, see what the comments are, you'd have to say, find me the document part, then loop through all the relationships until you find the comment part,
mm-hmm.
and then go and get that data. Now, with the new API, I can just say, open the package, get comments, and part.
And the comments are just blobs of XML.
Just blobs of XML that are stored within a part.
Yeah, excellent.
You can just ask for the... forget if we actually hand off the DOM or if we hand off what we hand off, but you can, at the very least, like with an image, you can get the stream of it and just push or pull the image right back out of the part as an object.
Right. So if I want to get the... if I want to just take the XML out of here... Right, as a stream, mm-hmm. and then open it in the reader, read through it, or open it in DOM, party on it, I can do that.
So now, back in the old days...
And that's true of the binary parts, like images.
Oh, so, great. Binary parts, what I was going to get at. So if I wanted to shove in an Excel spreadsheet into my Word document, where you could play with it inside of the Word document, which you can do, yes?
Yep. So you can do it embedded in an embedded other object.
Okay. Right? So just like before.
And in fact, the embedded object, the embedded... Excel spreadsheet would also just be an open XML file, right? Another zip, so you could just go and crack that open and keep drilling down into it if you want.
Or I could just create one on the fly, from data, which would be a lot easier this way than in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very simplistic view of it. I think Doug or Brian could probably give you a better...
That's the idea,
less understandable.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. that's the idea, right?
Simplistic. Yeah, and there's maybe one other piece to mention, content types. There's a little manifest, essentially, a little part. It's the only part that you can count on having a certain name. Anything else could have any name, but there's a content types part that's a list of all the content you might find in this package.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of nice for the consumer,
that's
say Office.
For the file.
Yeah, it opens it up and just looks at one little tidy list in XML of here's all the different types of contents in this package. Do I know what to do with them or not?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to having to look through this entire document to see what's in it.
Yeah,
there's just a little
not to mention
there.
Cracking this, binary.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah.
And
that concept of just looking through a little XML part for developers comes up over and over here. For example, images, Kevin mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know what are all the images in this document, there's just one place you go look at all the relationships, the point of all the images, so you can, count all of them or see how many JPEGs, how many bitmaps, just what's in here, mm-hmm. without having to actually look at the content. You can look at these relationship files, relationship parts to see what's here. So...
It's really much simpler
to analyze the content of the document and go straight to the piece you want without having to wade through the, the raisin cake to find the raisin.
Absolutely.
Just go straight to them.
And there's some great tools that are starting to show up out there from third parties. Like Wooter's got that great Package Explorer that he's built.
Yeah, that's very cool.
That makes it easier to just sort of look through these things and find them.
And Altova XML Spy now.
Yeah, I just saw that. I got an email on that. That was
very cool. Yeah, that's neat. And then you have Julian's project, right? The Java API that's also really sweet.
Yeah, and he's taken Julian's project and also those guys, Martin and Jacob in the Czech Republic and Belgium, who've done this PHP API.
Nice.
But both of those groups, Julian's group and Martin and Jacob's group, what they have is APIs that take all this a little bit higher level so that they've got things like a paragraph object or a cell object.
Hmm.
So they've kind of built on top of some of these other concepts we've been talking about to make it really simple. So a few lines of code generate, you know, a cool-looking document that has things you'd expect to find.
I mean, and that actually brings up a really intriguing point in terms of one of the benefits of having something like OpenXML is what you just said. Microsoft doesn't necessarily have to be the one that owns the innovation as far as the API is concerned, right? We may, obviously we have the framework, we're going to build stuff, you guys are already doing great work, but you just mentioned exactly what's very interesting. You make an understandable document that's easy to manipulate, I can create an API however I see fit, and if it's popular, it's popular, people use it.
Yeah,
in the end, we've enabled that, and that's something we don't normally do.
Exactly. I've kind of joked with some of these guys, like the guys I just mentioned. I say, you know, in the old days, if you were trying to build this API, we'd probably send a lawyer to talk to you, and instead I come and say, how can we help? You know,
awesome,
so
man.
It's kind of a new way of living for us. The format is an open standard. It's not ours, and frankly, it's good for us for all these other platforms to be writing against it. We like that. We don't see it as competition, but rather it's kind of opening up office to interoperate with even more platforms and other applications. So
what? Let's talk about that, though. I mean, how is that out in the real world? I mean, what's the feedback that you get from people? I mean, you know, the open office is of course associated with basically a movement, right? So let's talk about like the fact that I can create a Word 2007 document that will open up in open office if they support OpenXML.
Yeah, well,
is that
there's,
the idea?
That's the idea. There's a few things going on. You know, Novell has their SUSE Linux version of OpenOffice. I don't remember the version number that now has some OpenXML support.
Mm-hmm.
Corel, I don't know if we know anything about when that's coming, but Corel's working on OpenXML support.
Cool.
We expect right now is the very early days. Keep in mind, we're still going through the ISO process, so there are a lot of vendors who aren't yet really working on this, but we expect, roll the clock forward a few years, lots of desktop productivity suites are going to have support for this format.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many Office users, and there's so many benefits for Office users,
sure,
even separate from the interoperability story, that those people are going to be creating more and more OpenXML documents, and there are ISVs out there in these various spaces that will just be more and more opportunity for them to tap into going forward. So
yeah, you're seeing it pop up in places that it wasn't popping up before, right? Like like the MindJet stuff, right? That's pretty sweet. Where
new types of applications.
Yeah, it's like, you know, an application that you would never think of being related to word processing, right? It's just a brainstorming app where you get to kind of go and map out your thoughts, and then you press a button and it creates a Word document that's kind of a structure of your thoughts. So that's how you go and create a report, right?
Cool.
And then there's also, I can't remember who it was, but there's like, there's like a medical imaging company where they have like some hardware that takes different like medical readings, right?
It's Don Rule's working those guys.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah, it's this really, it's just this, basically this, you know, hardware. It's like a medical device, right, that would go and take measurements, and then
mm-hmm.
what it will do is it'll spit out a spreadsheet ML file, an OpenXML spreadsheet, right, that has all those measurements it's taken, but it's also branded and it has some charts and stuff like that. So rather than this device just passing out like a CSV file, which it used to do before, it can actually pass out a pre-formatted rich report on all that data that it just measured. Right?
Awesome.
Yeah. Another one similar to that is Monarch, you know, those guys, DataWatch. So their Monarch reporting product generates OpenXML spreadsheets, so they write formulas right into the report. So the report that you write a .NET app and you use their product, generate some report from your data, that report has formulas built right into it so that the user can open up the report and do kind of what-if analysis or play with the data interactively.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good example of something the new formats enable because it's really easy to write. You know, formulas are just plain text. What you see in Excel for the formula there,
mm-hmm.
that's literally what you write inside an F node for a formula.
Sure.
You've got a formula, so it's really simple.
Well, I mean, and you don't need to really understand, you don't need to have Excel on a machine to create an Excel document, right? You've already talked about that. That's huge.
Yeah.
You don't have to rely on that automation.
Yeah, and we've seen people try and do this before. In fact, there are some folks that are super smart and built some great tools that would actually allow you to go and consume or generate the old binary formats. Usually it's pretty limited, right? Just being able to go and pull just like some values out and writing them back in was actually pretty good. But there are some people that did some great stuff. The thing that this does now is it just makes it so much easier that those folks can go off and do some just brilliant stuff now, right? And then just, you know, people that are just kind of getting going can now go and do the basic stuff of pulling data out, pushing it back in. The other thing that's great, and another reason why that this helps us, is that it actually makes these solutions more robust. Like, we were finding that the majority of corrupt files that get sent to Microsoft for us to go and kind of debug and fix were actually corrupted by some application outside of Microsoft that was trying to manipulate the files, like, because there is a need there. There is a demand to go and do everything from just processing the metadata to pulling out basic values and pushing them back in. But the formats were really so much, they were just, the initial design of the binary formats from back in the day did not take this into account at all. You know, the things that we were worried about back then was like, how fast can we read from a floppy disk, right? And how can we deal with these low memory situations and make it so that we don't hang every time that we try and save, right? So that was kind of the target for those formats. We weren't really thinking about, like, having other people come along and manipulate them as well, right? And so now we've got this where we're moving to these formats where people can actually go and start to do really great stuff with formats, and it's just much more robust, much less likely that, you know, if you want to go and change the value of a cell, you can do that pretty easily. You're not going to corrupt the file by doing that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of new ways of looking at documents that we see ISVs doing, because in the past you got so buried in all these details of how to deal with the format that's what you're focused on, and now you kind of step back and look at things from a higher level. A great example of that is our friends at Zinnovation. They used to have a product, one of their offerings was something that lets you, basically a slide library on a server, and create, you know, a PPT file. And so a lot of kind of low-level hacking with the file formats involved there. Now, with the OpenXML format, they've kind of stepped back from a higher level, create something they call AssemblyML. It's a way of defining, this is a sales report. It's not a word processing document. It's not a spreadsheet. It's not a presentation. It's just a sales report. And then that's an implementation detail. So saw a demo of theirs last week where you just go say, generate my sales report as a presentation. So boom, you got a PPTX. Oh, generate it as a spreadsheet. Now you got an XLSX. But it's the same sales report. It's got the same data. It's just a different rendering of it. So that's a good example of stepping above all these formatting issues and document format details and thinking, what am I really doing here? I'm not working with word processing documents versus spreadsheets. I'm working with sales reports versus, you know, resumes in HR versus whatever. And it's kind of a cool way of looking at document creation. I think we'll see more people taking that step up, looking at it from above.
Yeah, we're really trying to make it so that for people that are building solutions, they don't have to think about, you know, just kind of the basic old world of, you know, productivity suites, right? Like a word processor or a presentation or a spreadsheet, right? Like that's just kind
done.
Of the, yeah, that's been done. That's like that's just the base kind of foundation, right? Like that's just kind of the envelope that carries your data around, right? It's not nearly as exciting as what you want to go and build on top of that, right? Like you're saying, your own data that you're going and building on top. And so now kind of make it so that, you know, if you want to go and build a tool that gathers customer data, rather than going and writing a web app where you have to go and write a bunch of script that tries to mimic the behaviors of a word processor or a spreadsheet.
Or worse yet, actually automate that word processor.
Yeah, yeah.
Or spreadsheet application on the server.
That's
right?
Not safe for multi-threaded environments.
No.
And we've had lots of customers try it.
Single-threaded environments.
We've tried it in-house, and it doesn't work very well. But now, you know, it makes all of those scenarios possible and supportable.
Multi-user. Well, I mean, I guess the notion of running Word on a server is just kind of insane, in my opinion.
And we have people who took that to insane lengths.
Yes.
Like, would write code to try to trap, okay, a modal dialog has just popped up, so make a note of where I am, kill Word, and restart it, and continue.
Unbelievable.
We have people writing code like that to try to dance around.
Well, it's awful, right? Because they're very legitimate scenarios, right? They're really important scenarios, and it's something that we don't support. We have knowledge-based articles saying how we don't support it. But people still, there just is a need, so they do it anyway. And yeah, we've seen it where people have a whole bank of machines running Word, and there's a person's job is to every hour walk down that bank and turn every machine off and turn it back on, because most likely at some point a dialogue has come up or caused the process to hang, and so they need to go and shut it down and start it over again, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, the one of the most fun ones I've seen is an app that the user would open up this web app, and they would type in some stuff, and then they'd hit go, and a dialogue would pop up and says, "Don't touch Word while this process runs." Big red dialogue, big bold letters. So, you know, so they'd sit there and they'd wait, and if everything went okay, then great, it would spit out a Word document. If not, they're standing there at their machine waiting for the dialogue to go away that says, "Don't touch anything." Which is very strange for a user.
It's been like this for weeks.
Yeah, it's been like this for weeks. We haven't touched it.
Insane. Well, yeah. I mean, the question, though, I would ask is, you know, so I've created a server-side API that spits out a Word doc because I just generate the right XML. But of course, there has to be a client that takes that and understands it. So Office, pre-Office 2007, there will be issues, yes?
Well, actually, so we released free updates for older versions of Office.
Cool.
Office 2000, Office XP, Office 2003, so they can all not just read the files, but also write them too.
Perfect.
Right? Again, like we think that these this file format's a big deal, and it helps, again, increase the value of Office. And so the more people that can consume the files and generate them, the better. And that's why we thought it was really important to go and provide these free updates to everybody to allow them to both read and write. And it was actually something that at the time, when we made the decision, it was a hard decision because it was a lot of work to do this. It was actually a whole lot of work, and we had to cut a lot of other features in order to get this in. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't something that we traditionally have done in the past, right? Where, like, when we made the file format change last time in Office 97, we didn't go nearly to this extent to try and ease that transition pain. Mm-hmm. But we just kind of we learned from some of those mistakes. And to be honest, like, it's funny that the main focus around the file formats has been more around the standardization front, because for us, like, before we went and released this, our main concern was just around whether or not people are going to just be upset that we're changing the file formats, right? Like, mm-hmm. people were very comfortable with the way things were going, and we really didn't want to do it, but it was just something that we had to do. There was just way too much benefit to making this move, right?
Absolutely.
But of course, we kept the old binary formats around as well, just on the off chance that it's still too painful and people want to stick with that. And we're actually seeing that at times, like when people go and deploy Office, what they're doing is they're going and by policy using the old file formats as the default, and then waiting until everybody has upgraded the new version, or at least everybody has those free converters, and only then are they making that switch to using the new file
formats.
And
they can manage that with group policies.
Oh, yeah, it's really, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it was the common belief around Office was that we never want to touch the file formats because our customers don't want us to touch the file formats. And then we started asking people, like, really, what do they want?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
it was like being I remember, like, the... For instance, like another big change in Office 2007 was the user interface. It just got completely revolutionized. And all the user interface guys were really, really nervous that us file format folks were going to go and screw everything up, and so that nobody would move forward and start using the new interface because somehow we introduced some pain from the new file format. So
don't you change our user interface, and don't change our file format.
Did both.
But we always heard.
Yeah,
we did both.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but for good reason, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, and one thing I think that's clear, or at least to me, I mean, seems somewhat clear, is that OpenXML really kind of heralds in the new day of the Office platform. I mean, Office has always been a platform, right? For about 15 years, you could always automate Office. You could always...
Really automation.
But it was always kind of hard, right? Mm-hmm. And now with OpenXML, you guys have really enabled a new... There's a lot of things I can do now as a developer on Office because of OpenXML. I mean, I can think of some interesting server-side ideas.
Yeah,
though there's tons of server-side scenarios, right? I mean, you've got data in a SQL server that you need out, or in a line of business application, mm-hmm. SAP or PeopleSoft or something like that, right? You need to get that data out and report to it to someone on a desktop who doesn't understand all of that, just understands maybe how to use Excel.
Yeah. Sure.
Right? and they need to build a report.
Yeah.
You know, they need to chart it. Uh-huh. Great, you know, I can pull that data out now and do it. I can aggregate that data.
Not only that, but you don't have to rely on the customer to then go, or the end user to actually go and do that work. You can do that on the server. You don't have to go and rely on the user mm-hmm. to go and click on this macro, run this macro, and then have all that stuff stored in like the macro full file format. You can just go and do that and use the X style format, which has no code in it.
Yeah, and it goes to that one version of the truth issue that a lot of customers have. Like they want to know, like, this income statement is this income statement, mm-hmm. and we all looking at the same thing? Absolutely, right? Because we're all getting it generated from the same back end data.
Yep, absolutely.
That there's, you know, we talk about this move from automating the office clients to all this nice lean server-side code, which is kind of cool, but there is one other side to that. We have a lot in the .NET world, we have a lot of developers who in the old days of automating the client, a few lines of code and you kind of create a document. And now from those people's point of view, like I've had guys in the workshops I do say, you know, hey, you keep saying hello world so simple, but I'm counting there's, you know, 12 lines of markup and three different parts. And I didn't have to do all that to create hello world, you know, back in the automation days. And so that's where some of these tools we're talking about, like the strongly typed parts we have now, where we're starting to build. It's kind of like we used to have this object model around the office clients. And now we're building a whole other object model from the ground up, packaging API, now strongly typed parts, who knows what's coming next, mm-hmm. On the other side, separate from the office clients. So we need to kind of mimic that highly productive environment that they used to have automating the office clients. And we know we're not completely there yet to the same level of productivity. Right now, you got a little more XML markup to deal with, but you're completely independent of Office. And so that's our goal, is to deliver tools that enable the same level of productivity in the server environment.
That sounds good.
Here's a great trick, though, that developers can do that can also help them jumpstart on top of the packaging abstraction that we've put on top of the packaging API, the document API. And that is, when they're dealing with XML parts, if they're using the XSDs that we shipped from, that ECMA has put out, they can use the XSD.exe tool that's included with the SDK and actually get a strong serializer that they can then go and walk through like a DOM, but with strong names on top of their XSD.
So that each element, they have like a class for that element now.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. And that kind of gives you some of this, that fills in that gap right away on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, especially if you're not putting extra attributes and stuff like that, you're going to be fine using that little XSD tool. Just get those documents. You're going to have to generate a bit of code. But, I mean, we got a tool built in with the .NET framework, that with the SDK, that's going to help you out with that.
Yeah, that's a great point, right?
Excellent. And, you know, I would imagine that the Office object model, which over the years I think deservedly has been bashed to some degree. I mean, Office hasn't always been known for having the greatest object model. At least let's look at Excel or some applications like that. I mean, I know I used to try to program.
I don't know if we can say that over here in Building 36.
Don't get me wrong.
Programmability.
I never, ever.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah, Microsoft, we never criticize ourselves. But I guess the point I was trying to get to was that with Office, with OpenXML, I would imagine we're going to see perhaps an evolution in programmability at the automation level.
Well, you're certainly seeing it in the data-centric applications, right? Those that are addressing the files and the data that within those files, because they're .NET, because the packaging API is .NET, and we're building on top of .NET, we're using the framework guidelines that Brad Abrams and Christoph Zelina published a few years back.
Sweet.
So, you know, it's easy when you have a brand new space to work in, right?
Yeah.
But if your API is growing over time, you know, say 15 years or so, like
in enough, you better believe it.
Completely different framework. I mean, our target really for the way the automation libraries, the type libraries, is built is for writing great, solid VBA code. And we're in a completely different world now. So if you're programming .NET and you're using the primary interop assemblies, it's just a completely different way, and a bunch of stuff in there just doesn't map quite right, and it's some pain for developers. Mm-hmm. The new API for developing document-centric codes will hopefully meet those expectations of being able to have like CLS-compliant code and really be able to take a step forward into stronger .NET code.
Well, it's completely managed code from the beginning, right?
Absolutely.
It's if I can twist this, natively managed.
Good.
And in the VBA world you alluded to, those people, like, there are additions to the object model, you know, custom XML parts and so on. You know, if you're writing VBA macros, you can play with some of these cool new concepts.
Oh, absolutely.
It's still through VBA, so that's kind of cool for the people who just want to throw together like a little macro that just reads some things out of your custom XML part. That's easy to do. It's not like you have to be a real developer to get at that stuff. So. Mm-hmm.
Now.
What does that mean?
Those are real developers.
The VBA, of course. Right?
Of course. Absolutely.
Anybody who writes, who knows how to compose and implement an algorithm in some language, you're a developer, whether it's interpreted
exactly.
or compiled. It's
absolutely.
A little bit harder in C++. But, of course, some of the more interesting additions, the automation will happen through native to native, right?
Yep.
I mean, Office is a native application.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the way it is.
I started with VBA. So I started my career VBA.
Kevin's man enough to admit it.
VB4, C++, C++, and then C#. And I haven't quite looked back from C#.
My first programming job was actually writing a macro in Excel way back when I used to work at one of the major automotive manufacturers. So,
cool.
And I heard a rumor recently that they were still using this for, like, defect analysis. This is back when I was in college.
Good code, man.
Yeah.
You know, Mark, I got to tell you, my first programming job, VisiCalc 1.0 hadn't quite shipped.
Dude.
Wow.
So okay, I didn't have the opportunity to do macros.
You win.
Did you know that he wrote an article on Dig Dug? Like, he used to write for a video game.
Oh, yeah, God, where did you find that?
I saw a link on your blog. It was awesome. He's got this big breakdown of, like, how to master Dig Dug.
He played Defender for 24 hours on a single quarter once.
Yeah, we all have a past.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing.
You haven't found my Photoshop tip online, have you?
No, I don't.
Oh, God, I shouldn't even be talking about that. But my wife got a camera, and it's a video camera, and I didn't know. I'm just wandering around late at night with my laptop. You know, Photoshop always corrupts these files. I have to delete or recreate. You know, next thing I know, there's a Photoshop tip posted on YouTube. So there's your tip. Go to YouTube, find my Photoshop tip.
Wow.
How did we get off on this?
That's great. We're humans. That's
we jumped off onto VBA, and it'll
yeah,
take you
okay.
down here everywhere.
Yeah. Kevin, what's your most embarrassing YouTube video?
I actually don't have a YouTube video.
We're going to work on that.
Unless this one is one.
Yeah.
No,
we're getting there.
That's cool. Especially, well, I'm going to take the part that we were supposed to edit out, and I'm going to put that on YouTube.
You
try to find that one, Niners.
Yeah.
But that's really cool. I mean, bringing back to OpenXML. Let's just really quickly go through each of you guys. I mean, give me quick, like, what's important about OpenXML from your perspective?
From my perspective?
Yeah, not Microsoft's. What's your perspective on OpenXML?
Working on OpenXML has employed me for the past 7 years or so.
Wait a minute. You've been working on OpenXML for 7 years?
Somewhere around there, yeah. I'm trying to remember when... you could kind of say it came out of the HTML stuff, but realistically, so when I started working on the word processing ML stuff was, I think, in 2000, yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting story in and of itself, man. Yeah. Glad I asked.
Gosh, it's been the most fun I've had at Microsoft, actually. I mean, working with Art on this API and working with Brian and Doug on this stuff has been just tons of fun.
Okay.
And it actually gives me props with my friends who are open source advocates. So.
Oh, I'm sure. But, like, I mean, how would you explain OpenXML to your mom or someone who really only cares about the document and can care less about what's underneath
it? Yeah, I tried that once, actually. She's really impressed with the ribbon. OpenXML is not so much, you know, so much interest to her, but, you know, I basically tell her that it's the way that you can get to your data that was, you know, hidden and locked before in binary formats.
Excellent.
So... I'm a geek, so it's about three things. Developers, developers, developers.
Oh,
Steve.
Sorry, Steve.
Excellent.
God, I don't know. For me, probably the coolest thing about OpenXML has been all of the T&E I've been privileged to burn teaching developers about OpenXML.
Nice.
OpenXML has sent me to a lot of places. So,
excellent.
I'm kind of a travel geek, and it's kind of nice that we do these workshops in so many places.
And have you been getting positive feedback from the people you've
met? Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's cool. I mean, we get positive feedback, and we also get people who are kind of harsh critics sometimes. And to me, it's fun to get out and get involved in those conversations. And those conversations are a lot more fun, I think, in person than through the blogs and stuff. You get a room full of people, and this guy is, you know, a critic, and this guy's a fan or whatever. And it's kind of fun to see those conversations take place in real life, face-to-face. Frankly, we all know, I think you know, I see some of the stuff you get to do on Channel 9.
Yeah.
We know that online, the anonymity sometimes... the tone gets a little less respectful than it does in person. And in person, it's kind of fun. It's more like a stimulating conversation rather than maybe the mudslinging that sometimes happens online. So
true. Well,
I think it's fun getting out and just
people
in
listen,
person
though.
Talking
the,
to
the fact is that we're actually, you know, the Death Star, all that stuff that people think about when they think of Microsoft.
Yeah.
And you know, we're listening. We engage. So it really is interesting to me what do people not like about the concept of OpenXML? To me, I can't imagine, besides the fact that Microsoft created it, I mean, to me, it seems like it adds a whole openness that's never been in Office before.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not, not to get too much into various criticisms.
Fair enough.
But there are some views of document formats and structure that are based on the view that every document has kind of a logical hierarchy of it has sections that have subheadings and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's DocBook and other things like that kind of get around some of these concepts. And I think one thing that some people I've found don't like about the OpenXML format if they come from that background is they look at some of these documents and say, there's no structure here. It's just like a kind of a series of paragraphs, a bunch of content. But that is the truth. You know, that's what these documents are that already exist as .doc files or others. And I think that that's an area where it's kind of from the user's point of view, this is a purist theoretical debate, but there's a lot of strong opinions on both sides of that. Those sorts of things are where we get into some of these debates that frankly, Kevin's mom and my mom don't care about. You know,
sure. It's mainly geeks geeking out on it.
But we totally get that perspective, though, right? I mean, that's like the goals around that structure is something that we care about. We just address it in a different way, right? That was the purpose of the content controls and the pink XML tags that we had back in Word 2003 and then the custom XML support and content controls that we added in 2007, right, was about... like trying to give people the ability to add more structure, more semantics to the document, aside from just the basic streams of paragraphs and formatting.
Yeah, so you can kind of do either
way. But you also have the data that's broken up into parts with OpenXML, right? So if I want to go and just pull out, you know, the VBA project, I can do that very easily without actually having to go in and touch the markup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's really, when it comes down to the most important thing, like from, I worked on Excel years ago, and I've worked on probably in every product now, but... the cool thing that we can do, because it's XML, because we have these things, we can innovate. We can have more than 65,000 rows in Excel. We can have so much more data. We can do so much more with art than we could before because we had to continue supporting some of these old structures that didn't allow us to innovate in the space.
Mm. Art, you're referring to yourself? Or
no.
Drawings?
Drawings.
He is recursive.
Yeah.
We can do more with
XAML.
What about XAML?
I don't know. I just think it's interesting. It'd be interesting to shove that into a Word document.
It's just another custom schema, right?
You got it. Well, it's real XML, though. I mean, it's legitimate XML. So you could have... So that's another thing that's kind of cool about the notion of a document broken up into parts is that I could have pieces of it being fed from various locations.
You have a chunk of XAML plugged in as a custom XML part, and the document's just a carrier for it for some business process, and the next step in the workflow, all of a sudden there's some XAML interface.
And the XAML maybe is created by a web service somewhere that changes when I launch it and happen to be connected.
Exactly.
I mean, you guys really have opened up this whole document innovation, as you mentioned. It's a good way to think about it. Very cool. So what else? Is there anything else I've missed? I mean, I haven't read the 6,000-page specification. I'm sure there's some questions I could have asked you. Yeah, I didn't have time to read it last night, man. Yeah.
Dude, it's a real page-turner.
There's some hilarious Easter eggs in there. You should really read every word.
That's really cool, but it's ECMO approved, so people are a chunk of people are cool with your design.
Yeah, ECMO has finished their process. We're going through the ISO process now. Lots of healthy debate and discussion of the details.
Cool.
One interesting piece on that, though, is that when people first hear about it and they hear about the 6,000 pages, if they haven't gone and started building solutions already, it sounds really overwhelming. But the majority of the spec is reference material, meaning that it's there so that as you're going and implementing and you want to look up what a specific tag means, you can go and reference directly that tag and there's a definition of it. And there are just... there are a ton of features across those three products, Word, PowerPoint, and Excel, so there are a ton of tags that exist. But if you go and look at like the first couple parts of the standard, they're more like a couple hundred pages, and they really describe the formats kind of as a whole. They describe how all the formats work, what all the pieces of them are, and it's only if you need to go and reference a specific attribute or element that you really go into that meaty reference section.
So kind of a direct analog, really, to the MSDN type library.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, there was a kid I met at Linux World in Delhi early this year, a freshman college student, 18, 19 years old, and he'd written a little OpenXML spreadsheet editor, and his line that I kind of liked was, "I haven't read 6,000 pages in my life yet." He had built an OpenXML app, you know.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, again, because he's not, I mean, unless you're out there and you're trying to build a full-blown word processor, full-blown spreadsheet application, a full-blown presentation app, then you're not going to touch all of those pieces, right? It's going to be, you're going to go to the section that describes the information that you're trying to implement, like part of a spreadsheet or charts or whatever you're trying to do, right? And everything is laid out there for you, and so it describes how all of those pieces work. And the way that the spec is crafted and the way that the conformance clause is written, it's made so that people can use as much or as little of the spec as they want, right? So if you wanted to go, let's say that you didn't care at all about XML, but you really cared about spreadsheet formulas, and you wanted to go and use the way that the definition that we have for how formulas work in a spreadsheet, you can go and take those 300 pages out of the spec and say, that defines how I do formulas, and I'm going to use that in my own separate format if you want to, right?
Great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I used it putting together the prototypes for the API, where I was just trying to map everything out, and I could have easily walked down and bothered you and Tristan constantly, but I didn't think you wanted that. So
you already do that spec as is.
But it wasn't hard. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, I'm looking for the things that come that point from this part to another part. Okay, and as I found those tables within the spec, I kind of blow through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had our first iterations of what we were working on.
Yeah, that's really cool stuff. And if you send down this XML from a web service or a server, I could take it and do whatever I want with it. As far as, you know, like I could take it and make it a XAML document. You know, you don't have to have an office on your machine. I could still take this and present it in a very usable way, right?
Sure, you could transform it.
Transform it. Hard work.
There you go.
But the point is, it's interesting because it's not a bunch of binary crap coming down.
Right.
Just have some XML.
Well, you do the other way as well. Like, I had a case the other day. I was trying to put together a spec with the object model and some of the expressions in Access. And it was all in the help file. And I could go and copy and paste it into a spreadsheet. But instead, what I did is I talked to some of our writers, and I said, can you guys provide me what you guys do? I know you do it in XML. They gave me a bunch of XML files. I basically went into each XML file, pulled out the name of the expression I wanted and the description of it, and just had it insert into a spreadsheet, and I had an XLSX and 20, 30 minutes of coding and putting it all together.
That's awesome.
And boom, had the table I needed, and I was able to stick it in my spec.
Excellent.
We have an RD down in Bogota who saw a few weeks ago.
You are traveling a lot, man.
Yeah, to a lot of places.
All right.
But I can't speak the language. It's terrible. I wish I'd learned more languages when I was young. So anyways, this guy, Andre Bogota, he put together a cool little thing he was just playing around with, where take a PPTX and take each slide and render it Silverlight, just the text. Like, just, again, an example of how this open, because it's just XML, you can do whatever you want with it.
True.
So kind of a cool app there.
Absolutely. Well, this is great, you guys. It's great to finally dig into what OpenXML means and meet the people who actually thought it up, or some of them. And that's very cool. And so I thank you for